I think Mr. Richardson was a little bit in a hurry to make that statement. I think it's unfair.
Myanmar says it ousted former U.S. diplomat Bill Richardson from an advisory panel. It's Friday, January 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, two former secretaries of state warn Congress about North Korea's nuclear program. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis visits Vietnam. And India agrees to tighten maritime ties with Southeast Asian nations. That's all on today's VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us. Myanmar says that it decided to dump veteran U.S. diplomat Bill Richardson from an advisory panel on the Rohingya crisis and reacted angrily to Richardson's characterization of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi in his resignation letter. Suu Kyi's office said in a statement Thursday that during discussions in Myanmar's capital, it became evident that Richardson was not interested in providing advice as part of an advisory board and was pursuing his own agenda. Richardson told the Reuters news agency earlier this week that he resigned from the board because it was, in his words, a whitewash and lacked legitimacy. He said that Aung San Suu Kyi lacked moral leadership. One of the other members of the advisory panel, former South African Defense Minister Ralph Petrus Meyer, said Thursday that Richardson had expressed his own opinion and had done so prematurely and without the advice of the other board members.
I think Mr. Richardson was a little bit in a hurry to make that statement. I think it's unfair. And like the statement says, it's not a legitimate statement by him.
Meyer added that Richardson's statement did not reflect the opinion of other members of the panel.
Well, obviously he didn't check with us before he made that statement. And I think it's very unfortunate. He didn't join most of our proceedings since 2 days ago. And in any case, it was not the intention of the advisory board to make final conclusions this week.
Meyer spoke after touring temporary repatriation camps for Rohingya refugees set up by Myanmar under an agreement with Bangladesh. In a statement, the advisory board said that UN agencies should be invited to take part in the return and resettlement of the refugees. The statement called for an independent fact-finding commission to look into the situation in Rakhine State. Monique Skidmore is Deputy Vice Chancellor of the University of Tasmania in Australia and has followed the situation in Myanmar closely. She told VOA that Aung San Suu Kyi has not taken a strong enough stance about the situation in Rakhine State.
This is not an issue that she has ever spoken strongly about. Even when she accepted her Nobel Peace Prize, she simply spoke about the Rohingya as communal unrest. She's never shown leadership on this issue. And whilst we all understand the complexities of the emerging transition to democracy, the rise of Buddhist fundamentalism, the importance and the critical role that the military still has under the constitution, there still truly has been a complicity by Aung San Suu Kyi, which of course is disappointing for everyone who's ever known her.
Nearly 700,000 Rohingya have fled Myanmar's Rakhine State after a crackdown on the Muslim minority began last August. The Myanmar military was responding to attacks against a police station by a Rohingya insurgent group, but there have been reports of rapes, executions, destruction of villages, and other actions the United Nations and the U.S. State Department have characterized as ethnic cleansing. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. rejects claim that a drone hit a refugee camp in Pakistan. China pledges to further open up economy at Davos. Controversial Bollywood film opens amid threats of violence. North and South Korea form first-ever joint Olympic team. And improving inter-Korean ties could strain U.S. alliance. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Thanks for being with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Two revered U.S. former secretaries of state on Thursday warned lawmakers of a marked rise in nuclear dangers stemming from North Korea's race to develop atomic weapons and the means to deliver them. Henry Kissinger, who served in the Nixon and Ford administrations, highlighted what he called a systemic failure of the world order in dealing with nuclear proliferation. Kissinger said the denuclearization of North Korea must be a fundamental objective.
The most immediate challenge to international security is posed by the evolution of the North Korean nuclear program.
George Shultz, who served in President Ronald Reagan's administration, called the spread of nuclear weapons a major problem that can blow up the world. Shultz expressed alarm about what he sees as changing attitudes regarding the use of atomic weapons.
And in those days, people seemed to have an appreciation of what would be the result of a nuclear weapon ever used. I fear people have lost that sense of dread. And now we see everything going in the other direction, nuclear proliferation. The more countries have nuclear weapons, the more likely it is one's going to go off somewhere.
Shultz noted that the rapid spread of advanced technology presents security challenges, with countries able to use inexpensive drones to deliver conventional bombs and other weapons rather than military aircraft. Kissinger concurred. Lawmakers who normally opine at length at committee hearings mostly held back in order to give more time for the testimony of the two of America's best-known statesmen, both of whom are in their 90s. The committee's top Democrat, Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, agreed with the witness's testimony, though he expressed hope that China and Russia will cooperate more to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. Committee Chairman, Arizona Republican, Senator John McCain, was not at the hearing. He has been undergoing cancer treatment. Happening now in Asia, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists has moved its doomsday clock up by 30 seconds to 2 minutes until midnight. The organization said North Korea's nuclear tests and expected moves toward a larger nuclear arsenal in the United States put the issue center stage again. The clock is a symbol of how close mankind is to destroying the Earth. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis met Thursday in Hanoi with his Vietnamese counterpart and discussed closer ties with the country's president, Tran Đại Quang. In a move signaling the strengthening of military relations, Mattis says a U.S. aircraft carrier will visit Vietnam in March, the first such visit since the Vietnam War. The carrier's visit, the first to a Vietnamese port by a U.S. carrier, was announced by the Pentagon in August and would be a tangible sign of the expanding military cooperation between the former wartime enemies. Pentagon officials stressed that Vietnam's prime minister, the official head of government, has the final sign-off on an aircraft carrier visit, but that the process is moving ahead. Mattis's visit comes as Vietnam seeks closer economic and military ties, is praised by Washington for abiding by UN sanctions on North Korea, and expresses alarm over China's sovereignty claims in the South China Sea. Hanoi last year asked North Koreans to leave the country voluntarily and told the UN Security Council it was implementing Security Council resolutions over the North's nuclear program. Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Vietnam's decision is a sign that Hanoi wants closer ties with Washington.
There's only so much that Vietnam can get from North Korea, and that's a reasonably priced coal. Whereas in the South China Sea and Southeast Asia area, it's the Americans who have the ability to really exert stabilizing influence, exert some power. And in recent years, the Chinese have done very well winning over support and building ties, for example, with the Philippines and President Duterte. Cambodia is firmly in China's camp, Laos as well. The Chinese have made good inroads with Thailand, Myanmar as well, and even in Malaysia. So from Vietnam's perspective, they're starting to look a little bit surrounded, and it really is the Americans that do offer the possibility of sort of reestablishing some balance. And Vietnam, I think, is rightfully making efforts to build closer ties with the United States.
His trip comes on the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive in Vietnam.
That was, of course, 50 years ago. And that is getting to be ancient history. We have in the Americas, and the U.S. people even remember the Civil War. And that was a long time ago. Time has passed so much that any sort of influence or effect of the war is really diminished. And that's just really a curiosity more than anything else. And I think on both sides, there's a more of an interest in seeing what kind of relation we can build rather than trying to raise old resentments.
Brad Glosserman is a senior advisor to the Hawaii-based security think tank Pacific Forum. He says that Vietnam is acutely aware of China's growing assertiveness in the South China Sea.
They've had some incidents in the past where the Chinese have put oil drilling rigs in waters that were claimed by Vietnam. There was an incident between Chinese vessels and Vietnamese vessels. They fired some water cannons at them. I believe there are actually a couple of fatalities in there as well. If you recall, to go back 20-something years, and the Vietnamese and the Chinese actually fought over some of those disputed shoals and waters in the South China Sea. So the Vietnamese are acutely aware of the threats that are posed by their Chinese neighbor. And at the same time, let's also be clear that the Vietnamese are extremely shrewd and extremely smart geopolitically. And they are not, they understand that at the same time that while they're worried about China, China is a reality. And consequently, it will not be going away. So they're not prepared to go all in. And we need, I think, American analysts and decision makers generally are aware, but we need to remind ourselves that the Vietnamese are not going to go too far, that they will continue to acknowledge the reality of the Chinese presence on their northern border. And similarly, let's not forget, too, that they are both communist-led states, so that there's a fraternal alliance between the parties in both of those countries, and thus they, too, there is a certain language, if you will, and an understanding on certain levels about priorities and about values and about political systems and ideologies that will persist.
The U.S. recently transferred a Hamilton-class cutter to Vietnam's Coast Guard. It is now the largest ship in the country's Coast Guard or Navy. In 2016, former President Barack Obama lifted a decades-old embargo on U.S. weapons sales to Vietnam. The U.S. currently has 24 foreign military sales with Vietnam, valued at about $70 million. Last week, the U.S. Pacific Commander, Admiral Harry Harris, called China a disruptive transitional force in the Indo-Pacific and urged countries in the region to build capabilities and work together to ensure free and open seas. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
We have this news from VOA Asia. Australian physicist Michelle Simmons has been named the Australian of the Year. The National Australia Day Council said the 50-year-old scientist has helped put her country at the center of the space race of the computing era. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd reporting from Washington. With an eye on China, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and leaders of Southeast Asian nations agreed to strengthen maritime ties on Thursday. Speaking to a summit of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations in New Delhi, Mr. Modi called for greater security cooperation with ASEAN. He emphasized that freedom of navigation will be a key focus.
India shares ASEAN vision to peace and prosperity through a rules-based order for the oceans and seas. We remain committed to work with ASEAN to enhance practical cooperation and collaboration in our shared maritime domain.
Several countries at Thursday's summit are locked in territorial disputes with China, India in the High Himalayas, and Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam in the South China Sea. Observers say that China's aggressive stance in these disputes is prompting India and ASEAN to reach out to each other. Harsh Pant is with New Delhi's Observer Research Foundation. He says that India wants a larger footprint in the region, and many Southeast Asian nations feel they can no longer rely on the United States for support.
There is a perception in the region that America might be retreating, that America is not is unwilling, like the past, of holding up to its role as a security guarantor. And I think that creates a lot of concern. Now, if that balance is changing at some level, then I think it is in this context they have reached out to countries like India also.
India already has strong naval ties with countries such as Singapore, Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand, and Malaysia. In the past 3 years, Indian naval ships have visited ports in several of these countries, and joint naval exercises in the Malacca Straits might occur in the near future. New Delhi also has been deepening military cooperation with some countries, including Vietnam. This news from VOA Asia, a total of 169 Russian athletes have been cleared to compete at the Pyeongchang Olympics next month, but not the top ones. The International Olympic Committee banned Russia last month from Pyeongchang over systematic manipulation of the anti-doping system at the 2014 Sochi Games. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. We're glad you're with us on this Friday morning. Scientists have reconstructed the face of a 9,000-year-old Greek teenager, shining a new light on life in a period known as the dawn of civilization. As Faith Lapidus tells us, Dawn, as she is known, is giving scientists and the public insight into what life was like millennia ago.
This young woman named Dawn lived in northwest Greece 9,000 years ago. 21st century Greeks got to meet her this month at the Acropolis Museum. Her skeletal remains were discovered in a cave in Thessaly in 1993. Orthodontic specialist Manolis Papagrigorakis led the team that brought her back to life and introduced her at the museum.
Her biological age, if determined by the maturity of her long bones, is around 15 years. Although through the panoramic x-ray of her teeth, we determine her age to be 18, give or take a year.
The team reconstructed her face from a terracotta mold that included 26 muscles. She's dressed in a fur skin and has a bone necklace, representing what archaeologists believe people wore during the Mesolithic period. Her protruding jaw makes her look like she's scowling.
Dawn has functional prognathism. The bottom jawbone moves forward. This functional prognathism occurred because she probably used her mouth to soften leather, like the Eskimos did. They chewed the skin of the seals so they could soften them up so they could wear them.
Dawn may have suffered from anemia or scurvy. Evidence indicates she had hip and joint problems, which may have made movement difficult for her and contributed to her death. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
During his career, actor Christian Bale has portrayed Batman. He's portrayed someone who is a boxer in The Fighter. He also was John Connor in Terminator Salvation. But in a new film from award-winning director Scott Cooper, Hostiles, it addresses the theme of reconciliation amid the racial divide between whites and Native Americans at the end of the 19th century. Bale stars with Native American star Wes Studi. As VOA's Penelope Pulu tells us, the film looks at the roles Native Americans and whites played in the formation of the United States, but leaves no one unscarred.
Captain, you do know Chief Yellow Hawk. The Army wants to be certain that the Chief gets home to Montana safely without incident.
After years of brutal fighting between whites and Native Americans, Army Captain Joseph Blocker is told by his superiors to escort his dying mortal enemy, Cheyenne Chief Yellow Hawk, from New Mexico to his ancestral land in Montana. This political decision was made back east in Washington, D.C., following negative press reports about the treatment of Native Americans by the U.S. Army. Blocker has to obey.
I hate them. I got a war bag of reasons to hate them.
Christian Bale offers a powerful performance as the U.S. Army captain, legendary for his merciless attacks against the natives. Yet, despite his potential for savagery and unbridled rage, his character exudes a quiet dignity and stoic resolution.
Kidder! Yes, sir. Unchain him.
Bale says Hostiles, a revisionist Western, departs from the traditional story where the cowboys are the good guys versus the bad Indians. Cooper's Hostiles looks at the human capacity for committing atrocities by both sides as they fight for survival in an inhospitable landscape.
There's a horror element to this. I think there's this kind of imprisonment that certainly I can say my character's feeling. And one at the same time, like the absolute beauty of this landscape and of America, but how it can be absolutely horrific at the same time when you've had so many friends die for this land.
Like many Westerns, Hostiles describes a physical as well as a metaphorical journey of a group of people from different backgrounds.
You believe in the Lord, Joseph?
A young white wife and mother who has just lost her entire family in a violent attack by Comanches, a soldier deeply depressed over the atrocities he has committed, another soldier unrepentant over his part in savage murders. Still, the emphasis falls on the gradual reconciliation between the two mortal enemies, Captain Blocker and Chief Yellow Hawk, played by acclaimed Native American actor Wes Studi.
No, so it's an...
I think it's very accurate in that it's not a full-blown reconciliation. It's simply a matter of having a common foe. Not only the Comanche, but the weather, the land, the robbers, the fur traders.
Studi says these alliances have never quite bridged the divide between whites and Indians. Even today, he says, Native Americans are losing their lands to oil and mineral extraction.
Well, they've always been under threat, and now I think what's happening is that the larger American public is beginning to feel what we felt back in the day when genocide was the practice and colonialization was actually what was practiced.
Studi says the positive focus of Hostiles on reconciliation, redemption, and healing provides a cathartic outcome for the film. But audiences should not expect Native Americans to ever forget their treatment. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and on SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. And be sure to let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Keith Holmes. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.